Okay. So I'm excited to introduce Freya Soth. She contacted me, a few months ago to ask about, to talk about her interest in the hero's journey. I can't even remember what spurred you to call, but we had a really interesting conversation about the work that she does in her program, the Brave Life Project, which currently, she's going to explain all about it, but it's a currently in a young women's transition program at Oak Creek, and it involves storytelling, mythology, and the hero's journey, and that's something that's very dear to my heart. I, as a therapist, use it all the time to help people look at what they're going through and where they can, how they can envision where they're going. And so just a little bit more, she has a bachelor's degree in children's lit and library science and a master's degree in environmental education and has been a professional storyteller, teaching artist for a long time, and she's going to talk about her travels in her bow-legged gypsy caravan. So I think that I'll leave it there and turn it over to you, Freya, and I will mute myself, okay?
Okay, thanks. Lisa, and I just want to thank everybody who is on the call and off the call for the people who instigated and created and hold this Healing Story Alliance together. I'm really new to, I'm not new to storytelling, but I took a long hiatus and I'm new to these subgroups and just found the Story Alliance, Healing Story Alliance, and so I've just begun to skim the surface of those resources, and it's really wonderful. And I was telling Liz and Bob that yesterday I just was perusing, going down one rabbit hole after another, and came to a list of stories, and there was one said Dancing with Both Hands Free, and I clicked on it, and I read the bio, and they worked with the Hero's Journey with incarcerated youth in New Mexico, and they're both online, and I'm so excited, and I imagine that this is just such a great way to connect people and get some collaborations going. And anyway, I'm really excited about it. I'm going to talk tonight about the Brave Life Initiative. It's had several names, including the Brave Life Project. It started out as the Unfolding Journey, and then went to the Mythic Road Project, and then when I started talking to people about it at institutions, and they said, well, you know, that mystical stuff, you know, it gets like, I don't think we want to do mystical stuff. So then we came up with the Brave Life Project, and now it's the Brave Life Initiative. But first, I'm just going to give you a little bit of background on how I came up with the Brave Life Initiative, which is now a nonprofit that I co-founded to help people in transition, including and especially for at-risk and incarcerated youth, to help them navigate life's journey through art, storytelling, and hero's journey. And I'm going to tell you sort of how I got there. Let's see. So I lived in the high desert in the early 90s, about 20 miles from the Mexican border in southeastern Arizona. And I was an assistant librarian getting my degree, as Lisa said, in library science and children's literature. And I had to take a class on storytelling. And that's when I told my first story, but boy, were they bad. They were more like recitations of poems. And I was so far from being a storyteller, it wasn't even sort of worth mentioning. But as a librarian, I ordered a book called The Home Planet, which is a coffee table-sized book of planet Earth pictures from space taken by astronauts and cosmonauts. And when I opened it on the desk of in the library, everything changed. My world shifted really under my feet. I had an epiphany, and I guess I received the call. And I knew that telling children stories about this incredible place and space where we live and learning to appreciate how nature works in our own neighborhoods was my calling. I mean, so much so, I sold my house and most of my possessions. I packed up my kids, my cat, my dog, and my plants, and I headed to New England to study environmental education. But I'm not scientifically inclined nor detail-oriented. And so I picked a school that let me create my own path within the discipline, and I chose art and literature with a little slash of storytelling on the side as a way to teach a sense of place. And after graduating with a master's in environmental education, we moved to Montana, where I auditioned for the Montana Arts Council, telling the story I learned for the occasion. It was from a picture book that had an environmental overlay. It was called The Old Ladies Who Liked Cats. It was probably a really poorly chosen story, but luckily for me, there were no Montana-based storytellers on the roster at the time, so I was in like Flynn. So then I learned four more stories, and I started getting a lot of residencies around the state because this was a hot topic. It was art and storytelling and environmental education. And it all worked fine as long as I saw each class that I worked with once a week. But 1 week there was a schedule mishap, and they scheduled me twice with the same class, which means I saw them six times and I had five stories. So, which I realized happened, they told me on the day, that Friday. And so I ran to the library during my lunch and pulled out a book off the 398.2s, and it was a collection of King Arthur tales, and I learned the Loathsome Hag, the Dame Ragsdale story, in 35 minutes. And this was my first long story to really learn and my first mythical story. And everything changed again. And I saw that this portal opened up, not only in me when I told this story, but in the students. And my love of the mythical just blossomed. As a result, I didn't sell my house this time, but I did mortgage it, and I commissioned the building of an English Bowledge gypsy caravan to use in my residencies around the Northwest. It was painted with all the ecosystems that you could find in the Northwest, and I took it to the Yukon and I was an arts in residence on the ferries of Alaska and went over the Olympic Peninsula and traveled with it. But what happened is I saw that it didn't matter whether I was telling environmental stories. It really mattered that I was telling stories. So a few years later, I was back in Arizona in that same small town doing my sense of place work, but I was searching for a way to access that mythical realm when I met Liz Warren at one of her colleges, South Mountain Community College's storytelling concerts, and then over the next 4 or 5 years, we collaborated and conducted a series of workshops for women at our ranch that used myth and storytelling and art to plumb our psyches and ground those explorations in creative and artistic endeavors. And they were a huge success. And they further opened that portal for me into what it was meant to me to live mythically and consciously, if it's only for that prescribed periods of time and a few days after when I all those lists of to-dos were just sort of evaporated and I was living in archetypal time. It was during that time that Liz and others introduced me to the hero's journey and Campbell's work, and I never looked back. When my husband died suddenly in 2003, the structure of the path of the hero was a guide and a metaphor that I kept coming back to. It kept me grounded. And I threw myself into my art, turning our bedroom, which was now my bedroom, into a studio and making hundreds of shrines of all sorts of persuasions using this archetypal images and mythological themes. And I did this for 5 years. I sold everything I made until one day I looked up around and knew I was ready to get out of that canyon and see what was next. And what was next was a 2-year artist residency in Mendocino, California, where I explored my art, which is mostly found object and collage, as seen through the lens of the hero's journey with an overlay of my life. And I called it Freya's Journey, and I turned it into an artist book. I lived and breathed the hero's journey day in and day out. I referenced everything through a mythical and archetypal thinking. And, of course, that Northern California landscape is the redwood trees and the ocean was perfect for that. After the residency in 2011, I moved to Corvallis, a very nice but not very juicy or mythical place for me. I found myself in the belly of the whale. I couldn't go forward. I couldn't go back. And then one day I was asked to do some workshops like I had done with Liz at the Young Women's Prison nearby, and thus was born the Brave Life Initiative. So for the last 5 years, I've been working with at-risk youth, and particularly young women ages 12 to 24 years old at the Oak Creek Youth Facility.
Lauren.
The Brave Life Initiative is now part of a pilot program of the new Young Women's Transitional Unit. And these are young women who are within 6 months of leaving the facility, and they have good conduct records and are working on attaining their personal goals. The unit is a new building just outside of the prison walls, and women can go into town, they can get jobs, they can go on field trips, and they experience some freedom and connectedness to community. So enter the Brave Life Initiative, which is currently offering, or has been for the last 5 years, offering one model called the Path of the Hero, and now we've added two called the Hero's Toolkit. And we have four other modules in development that I will mention later. On this first module, the Path to Hero is a 10-session model that meets twice a week for 2 hours each. And in each session, we explore a step of the hero's journey. We open each session with a small ritual, setting an intention that this is their special time to explore whatever comes up to them without expectations or judgment. And then we tell them a story that exemplifies the step of the journey we were working on for that class. Of course, every good story holds all the steps of the journey, but we just exemplify whatever the step we're working on. After the story, we briefly examine the gift, for example, and how it shows up in the story and what the metaphors and symbols for the gift are or could be in their lives. The act of telling the story, as we all know, is the magic elixir for dropping into a deeper place where we can access symbols and meanings that may be contained within the psyche or the unconscious, and that certainly is our experience in working with the youth. Then the girls use the rest of their time of the session with grounding this experience as aligned with that particular step into a creative project, an art piece. And we design the projects for ultimate success for those who think themselves as non-creative types, though we highly encourage the idea that to be human is to be creative, and there is no such thing as not being creative. We use for our overarching structure for the classes an 8x8 accordion book made of heavy 140-pound watercolor paper. And they fold this so that each section of the book has a pocket for their writings and artwork, and then there's one section for each step of the journey. And the back side of the book, when you open it all out and lay it flat, allows space to create a life map of their own hero's journey. They work on the books on the individual standalone pieces during each session, and then Most of the artwork fits into the pockets, but not all of that. I'm going to give you some examples of the types of things they create for the different steps. For the call, they create a collage of their life before the call or the call itself. And then they cut that collage, and these are 8x8, remember, we're working in that form. They cut them in half to make the doorways of the threshold, which they glue onto the front of the accordion book. Then on the back side of those glued-on doors, they create the guardians of the threshold, the things that are keeping them from crossing. And then finally, for the front piece that is actually, when you open the doors, that front piece, they collage or paint what they see beyond the threshold, into the mystery and into the unknown. And the type of collaging you do is based on soul collage, where you search for images that call to you and you work instinctively instead of planning it all out. We use a solid background of some kind of a photograph or painting that allows them to unify everything instead of a chopped up piece of a vision board. So it all holds together, and they are become stunning pieces of artwork that they can really tell a story about if they choose. For the belly of the whale, we have them create mandalas or shields, with the center being where you have been and what you were leaving behind. And the outer part of the mandala is where you're headed and what you're bringing into your life in the future or would like to. For the allies, we use preformed papier-mâché masks that they paint, collage, and imbue with the characteristics of their allies. One of the girls said, when asked what she got out of the program, she said, "I would never let anyone help me, and now I'm going to look for my allies and let them help me." So this was a really important concept for the girls, because they it sort of takes this abstract idea of who has your back, and then we look at the values of really who are your friends and who is really worthy of hearing your story and your evolving story. One of the activities for the obstacles is to create a map of their inner critics, which is one of our biggest obstacles, and it's overlaid into a graphic of the brain that is sectioned out, a side view of a head with a brain and little sections. For the gift, they create treasure boxes and fill it with whatever symbols, found objects they choose to define what their gifts are. This is by far the most challenging project for the youth to identify for themselves. They have a hard time seeing what their gifts are. As one girl said when I asked her what she was good at or was trying to pull out her gifts, she said, "Well, I don't know. It's a really hard question. No one's ever asked me that before. I'm only 19. So limited perspectives here. And let's see. At the end of the 10 sessions, we host an open house either at the prison, or if I'm doing this, I'm speaking as though all of this work happens at the prison, but I do this work with middle school, high school, and even fifth and sixth graders, but I'm using the prison for this talk. but we hold an open house and a showing of their work, and this is where they are able to shine and tell their stories to people they have never met before. And because of the objects and the artwork, they have a palette of their stories right before them, and it's pretty moving and pretty wonderful and pretty uplifting to hear what they have to say about themselves and their artwork. One of the places we hold these openings is at the Art Center of Corvallis, and they have were one of our first supporters of this work, and they have sort of faithfully supported us for all these years. This is a quick overview of how we structure the sessions. At the end of each session, I ring a bell and we close it and make that special time really encapsulated and bookended. So what actually happens as a result of participating in this class for these youth? Well, what we see ourselves and have heard from the students directly is that they begin to understand that they are not stuck, that this isn't the only story they have, that this phase they are in, which the young women at Oak Creek all understand is the belly of the whale, is one of a continuum of spiraling steps that is part of the human experience, that we all experience, the call, obstacles, the return, etc. In a word, they gain a perspective on their lives. One girl described it as a window she didn't know was there being flung open and she could see outside. "I thought there was my life," she said, "before coming here, and then my life would just continue on when I got out. Now I see there's a big picture, and this is just one stop on my life. I have some perspective." Well, this is huge for girls who have come from very limited backgrounds or homelessness or been exposed to very few fine and beautiful things about the human experience. Second thing I think they get is, I know they get, is confidence in their ability to create something beautiful and confidence in their ability to articulate their unique journey. One girl said, "I never knew I could be good at these types of things. We usually only use pencils. I like knowing that I'm good at this stuff. She was a 12-year-old, by the way. The third thing I think they get is a sense of belonging, belonging to that group that they're working with, and a sense of belonging to the human story, and that commonality that we all share on life's journey. And I don't think a lot of them had realized that their stories were unique, but also something that everybody experiences in one way or another. The next thing I think they get is empathy. It comes from understanding the stories of the other and, again, the commonality of those stories. One girl said, "I don't like people, but this program made me able to see other people's perspectives and allowed me to be around people in a way I never had before." That's huge. And the fifth thing is a connection to something mythic, something deeper and bigger and richer than they have ever experienced before. One girl said, this is just part of a journey. The story goes on with whatever choices I want to make. And another girl said, it's like a vision quest without the peyote. That might be my favorite. We've recently added a second module besides the Path of the Hero, and it's called the Hero's Toolkit, which builds on the Path of the Hero using Brené Brown's work on resilience, vulnerability, core values, and wholehearted living. Our other co-founder, Jill Soth, is a certified facilitator for this work.
Hi, this is Angela calling.
It is a beautiful blending and a way of reiterating the perspective gained in the first module.
Hi, this is Angela Lloyd calling. Joining in.
Building an awareness of inner strengths, we use storytelling in our care as well. So the basis of the hero's journey we take on, but we go more into the things that allows them to rise strong and be resilient. It became very obvious that 10 sessions of 2 hours each was not, it was great, and we got great little openings, but after 15 years or 18 years or even 12 years of being in dire circumstances, it wasn't enough. It needed to be reinforced. So if anybody has just joined us, make sure you mute your phone, please. I think it's people are saying star six. Thanks. So a word about storytelling here. It is the core of our program. It sets the stage, it creates the atmosphere, and it allows the youth to drop into another place, and I would say a mythical space to do the work. We could not do this work without storytelling. It changes everything. One girl said, it made me see things differently, see my life differently. I wasn't in a good place when I started. At first, I didn't want to do this, but the stories drew me in, and the storytellers we know, but that is a big truth. We have designed 4 other modules for the Oak Creek youth that would extend the storytelling art and hero's journey concept out of the classroom. These modules that are in the works are Under the Big Sky, which is time and space in the great outdoors, The Way of the Apprentice, exploring the university, vocational and community colleges, and intern resources. The Heart of the Community, making connections and engaging in community cultural experiences. And Sensible, Practical, and Useful, everyday practices and skill building. So the Brave Life Initiative, besides working with at-risk and incarcerated youth programs, we're working in some other areas as well. We offer a module called The Healing Path for cancer survivors to explore their journey. And we've just brought on a young woman who is a cancer survivor, who is a potter and an artist who's going to be facilitating those for us. We have other trainings and workshops that we provide for counselors and educators, healthcare providers, juvenile justice professionals, and others looking for transformational tools. And these mirror the workshops that we do with youth. And they are the Steps of the Hero, the Hero's Mirror, the Daring Way, and the Rising Strong. And the last two are based on the research of Brené Brown. If you don't know Brené Brown, you might want to go to TED Talks, and she has two talks in there. She's a great storyteller. She's from Texas. She's a social researcher, and she has profound wisdom, and it's beautiful work that really overlays with the hero's journey. So I'm going to wrap up by saying that as our programs grow and expand and as we start the trainings for staff and professionals, we're addressing the problem of how to make storytelling available to those using our work who are not storytellers themselves. And I would love to start a conversation and hear from those of you who have experiences with a delivery system for a pool of stories and those of you who would be willing to add a story to that pool so that we could offer a diverse representation of stories and tellers. This is new territory and a scary one for me. I have had an intern from Oregon State who set up a YouTube account for us for the Brave Life Initiative. But I don't want to take the time today necessarily to work on my technology challenges, but I do welcome emails with advice or suggestions on how to create this or if it already exists. And any other kinds of collaborations, because I know that good idea out there is fed by many, many, many other good ideas and people doing the same work. Another part of expanding our workshops and training is the creation of a facilitator's guide, which I'm working on now. And we're calling this the Traveler's Guide to the Mythic Road. I'm going to stick with mythic. I don't care what they say, if they get mixed up with mystic or not. This isn't a process, and the format includes a chapter for each step within, and there would be a written story and then a link to a video of a storyteller telling that story, a personal anecdote of someone's experience with a step of the journey, for example, someone's story about their call or their biggest obstacle, and then activity descriptions of how we actually do in the workshops. If you want more information, you can check out our website, which is bravelifeinitiative.org. This was another mistake. Initiative is hard to spell. It has four I's. I actually misspelled the name for one of my email accounts and was wondering why I wasn't getting any mail because I had misspelled my own company's name. So please keep in mind that we're only 6 months into being a nonprofit. So the website is very beautiful, but it is only 6 months old. Before opening this up for questions, I would just like to reiterate that I would love to hear from you via email with any ideas or stories or information that you think are relevant for this work. I'd really appreciate it. And if you'd like to have a more of a conversation and ask some questions, you need to unmute your phones, which I think is another *6.
Freya, thank you. This is Elisa.
Hi, Elisa.
Can you hear me now? Am I unmuted?
You're unmuted.
Oh, good. Thank you so much. What an inspiring, beautiful program. I was wondering if you would tell us again the steps that you use for the hero's journey, because, you know, I've seen, so, you know, sometimes there are 10 or 12, sometimes it's broken down, you know, smaller number, but you mentioned many of them, but I'm not sure you mentioned them all. Could you just sort of
right.
run?
I did pick and choose. So this is what we do. We do the call, which includes life before the call. That sometimes is its own session, normal life, whatever that means. The call, the threshold, and we talk about the, with the call, I do talk about the refusal of the call briefly. The threshold, and there we mention the threshold guardian. The belly of the whale is very important. The road of trials, but the road of trials really is the obstacles and the allies. So it's not, the road of trials is not its own class. It is just part of allies and obstacles. There's the gift, the boon, And then the return, and with that I include the refusal of the return. And then the last one, I combine master of both worlds and freedom to live.
Mm. Nice. Freedom to live. Okay.
So with that one, it's like the master of both worlds is you have sort of gone deep to figure out what your gift is and to bring it back. But it also takes some work in the outer world to make that happen. And so once you can be this is my interpretation, once you can be the master of both those worlds, what's going on inside of you at a deep level, and then being able to do something with it in the outer world, then you have the freedom to live a wholehearted life.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Great. Well, thanks. I'll wait and see if someone else has another question.
Or idea.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else out there have a question?
This sounds wonderful. This is Linda. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the stories that you use, whether they are especially created for this program or are they folktales or something that you find that sort of fit?
They're not ones that we create. They're ones I find what works best is folktales and myths. So I can give you an example. We use, I do use the Loathsome Hag. I use Vasilisa and the Baba Yaga. I'm going to draw a blank of all my stories at the moment, but they are traditional. They are traditional and classic stories. And I think those just resonate. They're so open-ended and non-didactic and sort of unmoralistic that so much can be drawn from them in an open-ended way. And I think Laura Sims talks about this, about how the stories, and a lot of people do, I'm sure, but how the stories reach you and work on you in a way you may not even be conscious of. And this whole work that we do is about tapping the unconscious, so and bringing forth the soul collaging that we do, the way we have the girls sort of work instinctually on their art and giving them the tools to really come up with beautiful pieces. Yeah, there are some pictures on our website. Not as many as I'd like, but there are some pictures on our website.
Thank you. That's inspiring.
Yeah.
I do have one other idea. I do a program in our schools. It's called Spellbinders, and we do go in and tell stories. And we urge our students, and this may not work for you, to tell the stories that we've told to other people. And over the years, I found that when they say they've told them, it seems to me they have somehow come to a different level of understanding them and analyzing them and using them.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm sure they do. It's a wonderful idea.
Hi, this is Bob in New Mexico.
Hi.
First of all, thank you. It's just wonderful to hear about your work. So I'm curious if you could say a little bit about the allies and the threshold guardians you may have met at the prison. What kind of help and what kind of resistance have you found there over time?
Well, I mean, they like us so much they've asked us to be part of their pilot program. So this is Oregon, so it's pretty is pretty progressive. They are into positive youth development, where you it is not punitive, but you're trying to get them to encourage their strengths. So even though that may not filter down everywhere, that is the training that the staff gets, and that is their overarching philosophy. So we've been welcomed with open arms. The problem is scheduling, like in schools. Everyone is just so tightly scheduled with this and that, that it's our challenge is to carve out enough time to do all these programs and to get, you know, to get them. It's going to change now because, as I said, they have this new building and they're not part of the encased walled units in the prison. So it may get me to be more flexible. It may not be. And we haven't been able to teach in the new building. We're not doing that until March. So I don't know. So I have lots of allies. The superintendent and the head of all the youth facilities in Oregon comes to every one of the art shows, the openings.
Well,
so it's pretty. That's pretty cool. So I would say I've got great allies, and the Threshold Guardians is just you know, it's still. We're just coming out of the dark about how to deal with all the problems that youth have in the day. So those would be, you know, our own worst enemy, their families, things like that. But within the system, I feel pretty lucky.
Thanks. Thank you. That's
Hey, I would like to just jump in. This is Liz. And yeah, thank you. What you shared was just so enlightening and inspiring. Thanks. And I have a question about the school piece of it. I know you mentioned the scheduling. I can imagine that being a real obstacle at times, challenge. But do you do your program during the school day or after school? Or how does that work for you? How do you coordinate that?
Well, I have done both. I've had to squeeze it down to 6 or 8 sometimes classes for the schools. I just got rejected for a huge grant to do it with at-risk middle school kids after school, where food and incentives and transportation getting them home was included, and we didn't get it. And I'm really sorry, because the kids who are the most attracted to this work are not the troublemaker kids or the kids who are outlandish in any way, or they are the quiet, brooding, loner, isolated kids who absolutely come alive because they're can express themselves, and they don't have to tell you what they're expressing.
Yeah.
So it's not like therapy. You know, they can do it, and it makes sense to them and what they care about, but it doesn't, they can be private about it, but they glow making their shields, or with the mandalas and the belly of the whale, sometimes we do shields instead if they're a lot of boys, or they have a choice. But it's a problem. It's a problem, and if I were queen, kids who were failing in school would have an alternative track they could go to for part of the day, so they could do the stuff to sort of figure out their core values and where they're resilient and how they can have confidence in a world that in an atmosphere where they do not feel like they belong. So I'm not queen yet. So, but that's where I would go. And I just thought something for the Coalition of Juvenile Justice. There's a whole bunch of money that has just been allocated for prevention and at-risk kids, keeping them out of jail, and for programs for kids who are inside. And so I don't have any idea of how that money is going to be distributed, but I'm very curious to see if we can get any of that filtering down to programs like this.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
I've done some work in a prison, and I'm wondering, has this ever been done with adults?
I don't know. I've worked with adults, but not in prison.
I see. Because it does seem like it could be very valuable in terms of preparing for release.
So one of the things that happens at OSU, Oregon State University is here in Corvallis, is, and I think it happens around the country, is a program that many of you may know about or some of you may know about called Inside Out, where a professor takes a class of sociology students, I think, usually, and they go in and they study a sociology curriculum with inmates. And the kids, the students are paired up with the inmates, and so they have this sharing and perspective of each other. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool to do this with an Inside Out program? So it's on my list. I have a very long list, but it's on my list. I don't see why it wouldn't work. I think it would be. You might have to, with men, you might have to find ways where they would, that they would do things that would not be very necessarily artsy, craftsy. I don't know. There would have to be some modification. With women, you could totally do it without changing a thing. That's my guess.
Freya, could you talk a little bit about the life map that you create? I'd love to hear about it, what it looks like, and it just sounds
This is something I've been dabbling with, but I actually just took a workshop last weekend to really get in depth with it. But you can take any thread of your life or any story of your life and overlay the hero's journey on it. And so what we do on this 8 by, now it's very long, but it's 8 inches wide, and it goes for, it must be 80 inches long, 10 times 8, yeah, 80 inches long. And when you smooth out the back, the front has the little pockets on it that I mentioned, and you smooth it out in the back, and they can do some background colors, and then they can draw what symbolizes the thread, the path that their life has taken, looking at whatever part of their life you want to look at. You could look at, for the girls, they could look at from incarceration to their future. They could look what led to this incarceration and then project out what their gift would be and what life would look like. But whatever thread you take, and let me give you an example. What I did is I chose the thread of what is a mythical life and what are the things in my life that I have considered to be mythical. I mean, my homesteading in Maine, my traveling in the gypsy wagon, and, you know, et cetera, that kind of thing. Someone took how I became an artist. One person took what if. What if my life, I had made these other choices? And somebody looked at what it meant to belong. And they weren't layering the hero's journey on top of it, but you certainly could. And then you can collage for each of those steps. And then you write. And the writing can be not complete thoughts, but it can be a way to journal about what you're thinking about those different parts of your life. And I suggest there's some cool books about mapping and your personal life. I think one of them is called Personal Geography. And I would just Google life mapping. And the woman that I think it's on my website under workshops because it was sponsored by the Brave Life Initiative for life mapping. It's very cool. It's really cool. And what you then have is something you can keep going back and writing on as you have insights about the different parts of your life and those different steps. So,
great.
I've also done it, I might say, with a huge piece of paper on a wall. I mean, huge, huge. I mean, like 6 feet by 15 feet. And we draw an outline of a path with some zigzags. And the girls go in, and when they finish their assignment, if they have, they work on the map. And everybody puts on their call and their obstacles and their allies. And then they can tell their stories that way. So that works out really well, too.
Mm-hmm. I love all the things that you described of how it's so effective, giving them perspective that they didn't have. It's such a beautiful thing for a young person to be able.
Well, and the perspective also comes from sort of being able to articulate your story. And
mm-hmm.
out of your story, you can identify your core values. And that's huge. And then I asked the girls, they go to counseling and do things in the prison, and I said, well, you know what your core values are. You've identified them. And they just, no. So it's good. It's so rewarding and nourishing for me. I can't even tell you.
Great. Any other thoughts? Comment.
Well, if you do, you can just go to my website, or you can just, I actually have, I have a Mythic Road email account, mythicroad@gmail.com, which is easier to spell than bravelifeinitiative@gmail.com. But both of those will work. Don't forget, they're for eyes and initiatives.
It's on the web, too. People can just go to the site and click on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much, Freya. Really appreciate everything you shared. It's a beautiful vision and I think something for us all to take a little bit away into our own work, definitely.